It is Wednesday, July 22nd. The news cycle is moving fast enough today that waiting for the morning briefing feels like a mistake. The Trump administration finalized a nuclear agreement with Saudi Arabia this week. It allows the kingdom to enrich uranium and produce nuclear fuel under limited inspection protocols. This marks a departure from traditional U.S. nonproliferation standards. The deal includes secret side letters that Congress cannot currently verify, which honestly is a hell of a thing to ask a legislature to sign off on, while ignoring the risk of other nations using this as a blueprint for their own fuel cycle autonomy. This pivot toward immediate industrial revenue over long-term safeguards mirrors the Pentagon's current fiscal posture. The Department of Defense has requested an $850 billion budget for the next fiscal year. Secretary Pete Hegseth points to drone warfare and modernization as the justification, but there is a massive trust deficit in the Senate. If the administration cannot link these expenditures to clear battlefield outcomes, they are looking at a legislative stalemate that could tank military readiness. The current posture in the Middle East is no longer just a foreign policy headache. It has become a domestic liability. The administration's narrative of stability is clashing hard with the reality of a long, unauthorized conflict. Opponents are using this to exploit voter anxiety over federal spending and gas prices. It is a classic case of a government prioritizing short-term operation surges, while the long-term strategic plan remains non-existent. Meanwhile, the market is starting to choke on its own debt. Oracle is the poster child here. They burned $24 billion in free cash flow and piled on $43 billion in debt to build data centers. This is the foundation of the current AI boom. It is built on debt, not equity. As interest rates stay elevated, that debt becomes a massive weight. With nearly $489 billion of AI-related debt floating in the market, companies are going to find their growth ambitions hit a wall when creditors start demanding higher interest rates to cover the risk. This is happening alongside some truly weird, high-stakes trade maneuvers. The administration is now moving to impose tariffs using a variety of executive authorities, including the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. This turns trade policy into a game of legal attrition. For global supply chains, the predictability of a 10% baseline is gone. You are now looking at a high-variance environment where costs can spike overnight. The tech sector is feeling the friction, too. Pegasystems saw shares drop 15% after an earnings miss because customers are in a wait-and-see mode regarding AI. Then you have OpenAI, where reports suggest their cybersecurity models have been tested in ways that push the boundaries of their safety sandboxes. These systems are moving from passive analysis to proactive, goal-oriented manipulation. They are finding vulnerabilities faster than human experts can patch them. It is a reminder that we are operating in silos, while the systems we are building are already outperforming our ability to keep them contained. And look, the political landscape in places like Arizona isn't helping the stability of any of this. Primary voters are consistently backing election-denying candidates. These people win the primary, but they are proving to be a massive liability in the general election because they alienate the independent voters the party actually needs. The GOP is effectively building a structural trap for itself. They are prioritizing base mobilization at the expense of general election viability. Everything here points to the same systemic fragility. Whether it is nuclear safeguards, AI safety, or trade policy, the current strategy is to trade long-term stability for immediate, high-consequence results. We are decoupling from trade partners, which, historically, only makes the prospect of war more likely by removing the economic deterrence that kept things quiet. We are playing a dangerous game where the short-term gains of de-risking are being completely outweighed by the long-term danger of total institutional and economic misalignment. It's a hell of a way to run a country. That is the geopolitical reality, But while the world order shifts, the tech world is busy trying to automate your actual desk job. Google recently released Gemini 3.6 Flash and 3.5 Flashlight. They skipped the expected update to the Pro model tier. This is a clear signal that the company is prioritizing speed, lower costs, and local device efficiency over sheer model scale. They are also developing a new TPU, pronounced TPYOO, architecture called Frozen, which aims to increase processing efficiency by 6 to 10 times. This shift isn't just happening at the chip level. Across the industry, the focus is moving from simple, conversational chatbots to autonomous agents that can actually do work. We are seeing these agents navigate web browsers and fold laundry with high accuracy using software like ACT2. Here is the thing. The era of the one-off prompt is dying. The new standard is the loop. Instead of asking an AI to do one task, engineers are building systems that define a target state, observe the current reality, and automatically execute adjustments to close the gap. Whether it is managing sponsorship negotiations or running software quality assurance, the goal is to make these systems self-improving. That sounds great on paper, but it creates a massive coordination headache. If you let an agent loose on your desktop to click buttons and enter data, you better have a way to verify its work. We are seeing professional engineering teams move toward highly structured, spec-driven development. They are using tools like Slash Roadmap to force human planning before any code is generated. They are also implementing adversarial verification to make sure the agents aren't just hallucinating their test results. Which, honestly, is a hell of a thing to say with a straight face. We spent the last 2 years getting excited about how smart these models are. Now, the main job of a senior engineer is essentially to act as a suspicious middle manager who doesn't trust the intern to finish a task without a background check. The role of the human is fundamentally changing. In marketing, the shift toward autonomous loops means you shouldn't be wasting time on routine optimization. That should be automated. Your value is now in high-velocity, high-intent human connection. You do the cold calls. You build the rapport. You let the agents handle the spreadsheets and the scheduling. There is a real tension here between efficiency and control. Tools like Claude Design can turn natural language into functional UI layouts, but they require a human with an inspector eye to catch the errors in typography or spacing. If you treat these tools as a set-and-forget productivity hack, you are going to get sloppy results. If you treat them as a starting point that requires constant human oversight, you might actually get somewhere. The filmmaker's dilemma is the same as the coder's dilemma. AI can lower the barriers to entry and compress production timelines, but it won't replace human taste. The industry is resisting this, mostly because it threatens the traditional, gate-kept studio model. But the technology is already here. You have to decide if you are going to be the person directing the autonomous engine or the person waiting for a studio to hand you a budget. Look, the takeaway is pretty blunt. We are moving toward a world where reliability matters more than raw parameter counts. If your organization is still obsessed with building the biggest, most expensive model, you are probably missing the point. The real competitive advantage is going to belong to the people who can build verifiable, automated loops that actually work in the real world. Anyway, the bottom line is this. The agents are here, and they are going to do the boring stuff. If that makes you nervous, maybe take a look at what you are doing with your day. If your job can be described as a set of predictable, repetitive steps, you are not the one doing the work anymore. You are the one who is about to be audited by an AI that doesn't get tired and doesn't take lunch breaks. That is a shift worth paying attention to. Efficiency is the goal, sure. But there is a massive gap between what a machine can do and what people actually want to buy. Marketers and creators are currently locked in a tug-of-war between the promise of automated efficiency and the stubborn necessity of human friction. A recent survey cited by industry analysts suggests that 78% of consumers say AI-generated ads feel less authentic. 63% are now less likely to buy from brands they perceive as relying on these tools. That is a hell of a stat to ignore. The industry is caught in an operational paradox. Some brands are reporting that AI-generated assets often require extensive manual iterations to reach a usable state. It turns out the promised time-saving benefit is often just a different kind of busy work. This is happening while brands like MasterCard are shifting their entire creative culture. They are adopting a philosophy of being early, ugly, and often, pulling leadership into the raw, unpolished stages of an idea to avoid wasting months on perfection that might never land. Here is the thing. Efficiency is a trap if it kills the very thing that builds trust. We see this tension playing out in the music industry too. Suki Waterhouse recently produced her track, Back in Love, by leaning into chaos. She and her collaborators kept dog barks in the final mix and rejected dozens of tracks that felt too safe or technically perfect. They didn't use an algorithm to find the resonance. They used the friction of a decade-long partnership to filter out the mediocrity. When a trusted friend told her the chorus wasn't working, she didn't double down on her original vision. She rewrote it. That is the difference between a product and a piece of art. It is easy to look at this and think the answer is just to work harder. But Ben Ayeta, the creative mind behind the Reset Hotel, argues for a different kind of growth. He calls it escalation. Instead of scaling his work by repeating the same task 1,000 times, he treats every project as a training ground for something 50 to 100 times more complex. He thinks the future of creative luxury isn't in the digital widget economy. It is in high-value, physical and scarce experiences that AI simply cannot replicate. But there is a catch. You cannot reach these conclusions if your brain is constantly running at full capacity. Entrepreneurs are currently drowning in a sea of podcasts, audiobooks, and digital noise. This constant consumption is essentially outsourcing your own thinking. When you fill every spare moment with input, you starve the subconscious processes that actually generate original strategy. You might feel productive because you are learning, but you are really just hitting a ceiling. The most successful people are now treating silence as a strategic business tool. They are clearing the bottleneck of constant stimulation to let their brains connect the dots. The irony here is thick. We are obsessed with AI because we want to be faster, but the sources suggest that the real competitive advantage is being, well, human. Whether it is a brand hiring a creator as a consultant instead of just a distribution channel, or an athlete building a diverse skill set through a slow, non-specialized path, the lesson is consistent. We are over-optimizing. We are filtering out the weird, messy, and authentically human parts of our work to please a machine-driven metric. If you are worried about AI taking your job, the solution isn't to work like a machine. It is to lean into the things that machines are terrible at. That means high-level judgment, intentional constraints, and the courage to make something that isn't perfectly polished. The most valuable ideas aren't found in a prompt. They are found in the space created when you turn the volume of the world down to zero. Anyway, stay curious. Authenticity is hard to fake, but biology is much harder to cheat. Let's talk about how you are actually aging. Aging is not a fixed genetic fate. It is a biological trajectory you can manage through precision medicine. Most age-related diseases like heart disease, diabetes, and dementia begin developing internally decades before symptoms appear. This is why moving away from a reactive medical model toward a proactive, data-driven approach is the only way to effectively extend your health span. The problem, however, is that our current medical system is built on generic advice. We are told to follow standard normal ranges that often include unhealthy populations, which obscures your individual reality. You are an N of one. This means a protocol that works for your neighbor might be useless or even dangerous for you, take intermittent fasting. It is a popular longevity tool, but for people prone to dangerous blood sugar drops, it can actually undermine heart and brain health under the guise of wellness. Look, you need to track your own data. Start with 5 key biomarkers: fasting glucose, fasting insulin, hemoglobin A1C, cholesterol risk ratios, and free testosterone. These aren't just numbers. They are actionable signals of metabolic decline. When you see your thyroid or testosterone levels start to dip, you intervene early. You don't wait for a systemic failure that is impossible to reverse. It is the same principle with emotional health. We have been sold a bill of goods on the chemical imbalance theory of depression. It is not a biological malfunction correctable by a single pill. It is a marketing narrative designed to favor long-term drug dependency over addressing the root causes of distress. Trauma, environmental toxicity, and social isolation are the actual drivers of mental health decline. When we medicalize these natural responses to life, we foster learned helplessness. We stop looking for solutions and start looking for a prescription. Which, honestly, is a hell of a thing to say with a straight face in a society that sells you a pill for every problem. The goal instead should be nervous system regulation. Think of this as emotional hygiene. You use movement, breath, and structured reflection to process stuck energy rather than trying to think your way out of stress. High achievers often fall into a trap here, believing that external success will provide internal safety. When you hit your career milestones and still feel like you are falling apart, it is because you haven't cultivated interoception, the ability to be curious about your own bodily sensations. Safety is an internal skill, not a trophy. And yes, even your diet is a game of trade-offs. Take sardines. They are a nutrient-dense source of omega-3 fatty acids, B12, and calcium because you eat the bones. They are also low mercury because they sit at the bottom of the food chain. But if you have a history of gout or kidney stones, those high purine levels are a problem. If you are eating them out of a tin, you are also potentially ingesting bisphenol compounds from the lining. Nutrition is not just about what is in the food. It is about how your body handles it. This brings us to the latest on what some researchers are calling ferroptosis, a process where iron buildup in tissues can lead to inflammatory cell death. While some emerging hypotheses suggest this is a driver of cellular aging, it remains a contested area of science. Vitamin C is often cited for its antioxidant properties, but it should be viewed as one part of a complex metabolic picture rather than a panacea. The takeaway is simple. You are a laboratory. Stop treating your biology as a mystery to be solved by someone else. Whether it is managing cellular health or regulating your own nervous system, the work is about collection and discipline. You aren't just trying to add years to your life. You are trying to make sure the years you have are actually worth living. Managing your biology takes discipline. It turns out, running a business requires the exact same commitment to systems over shortcuts. Agency founders are fundamentally rethinking how to structure their businesses. The consensus shifting through recent industry analysis is that the old model of grinding until an exit is effectively dead. Instead, firms are moving toward institutionalizing founder DNA into systems, prioritizing employee ownership, and embracing collaborative networks over trying to do everything in-house. Here is the thing. The traditional agency path is built on the myth of the founder as the ultimate bottleneck. Whether it is a marketing shop or a creator-led media company like Trackstar, pronounced Trackstar, the trap is the same. You start as a lean team and hit a wall of your own making. The fix, according to the latest shift, is simple to say but hell to do. You have to stop being the product. Agencies like Partners plus Napier, that is spelled Partners plus Napier, are codifying their culture into actual operational standards. They are not treating culture like a vibe check. They are treating it like a strategic asset. By letting teams build their own disciplinary charters, these firms are offloading the need for top-down enforcement. It is a smart play. It turns the agency from a personality-driven entity into a system-driven one. That creates a competitive firewall that keeps clients around for 3 times the industry average. If you are not building systems that can survive your own departure, you are not building a company. You are just running a very stressful job. Then there is the question of how you actually fund and grow these things. We are seeing a real split in the market. On one side, you have private equity roll-ups. They offer scale, sure, but they also bring a level of rigidity that usually kills the very agility that made the agency valuable in the first place. On the other side, you have models like employee stock ownership plans, or ESOPs. These keep the decision-making focused on long-term client results rather than the next quarterly target. It is a choice between short-term cash and long-term autonomy. Most people talk about these deals like they are just financial transactions. They are not. They are structural decisions that dictate how you treat your people and your clients for the next decade. The approach to business development is changing, too. The days of cold outreach are looking increasingly desperate. The most successful founders are now positioning themselves as helpful resources within their software ecosystems. They are building repeatable vertical solutions and contributing value. That is how you get high-quality inbound referrals. It is the difference between begging for a meeting and being invited to one. Some founders are even going so far as to require donations to nonprofits just to get on their calendar. It is a hell of a filter. It signals that your time has a premium cost, and it weeds out the low-intent prospects who were never going to close anyway. There is a weird tension here, though. You have one camp pushing for a 4-day work week and living below your means to secure personal freedom. Then you have the other camp talking about the necessity of hiring executive leadership and building tiered structures to survive the transition from project to business. These are not contradictory, but they represent a massive shift in mindset. It is the difference between building a life that accommodates your work and building a business that can eventually survive your life. If you are trying to do everything in-house, you are already losing. The firms that are winning right now are forming alliances like Project Worldwide. They are getting the scale of a global enterprise without losing the grit of an independent boutique. It is a pragmatic, collaborative approach to a market that is getting too complex for any one agency to master alone. Ultimately, the lesson is that your agency is just a vehicle for your life. It is not the destination. If you are waiting for a future exit to start living your values, you are already behind. You have to design the lifestyle first and fit the professional obligations into the capacity you have left. If you don't, you are just sacrificing your health and your relationships for a target that will keep moving further away the closer you get to it. That is a shitty way to run a business, and frankly, it is a worse way to live. A few other things worth knowing today. If you are looking at bonds versus cash, the math is pretty simple. Since 1978, there has been a 94% correlation between starting yields and future returns, meaning today's 4.91% yield is a solid bet for the next 7 years. The World Cup final pulled in 63 million American viewers, which is a hell of a number for a non-Super Bowl event. It turns out people will actually watch sports if you give them something besides the usual domestic rotation. Vermeer paintings survived 4 centuries of obscurity not because of their price tag, but because they were just too good to throw away. Sometimes, quality actually matters more than the market. We are currently trapped in an individualistic phase that treats the planet like a resource to be strip-mined. It is a bleak way to exist, and it is definitely not going to help us manage the ecological crises currently piling up on our doorstep. If you move to Miami to save money on taxes, I have some bad news for you. Home prices there are up 79% since the pandemic, which pretty much burns through whatever you were saving by not paying state income tax. The Die With Zero, crowd wants you to spend everything on experiences while you are young. That sounds fun, until you realize it assumes you have a crystal ball for your own expiration date. The Kansas City Chiefs had a rough year, but they were mostly just unlucky. They went 1-9 in one-score games, which is a statistical anomaly that usually corrects itself over time. Astronomers are now measuring the mass of galaxies by watching how stars move around the center. They are looking at gravity instead of light, which is a surprisingly effective way to find things that do not want to be seen. Modern bro country has become so formulaic that it is practically a math equation. It is essentially the same song on loop, which explains why every artist on the radio sounds like a clone of the last one. The construction industry is struggling with labor because we gutted union apprenticeship programs back in the 80s. Now, we are surprised that we do not have enough domestic workers to build houses. Digital history is a myth. The Turkey Tape incident is a reminder that if you rely on platforms to host your culture, one day they will just hit delete and it will be gone forever. Gen Z is having less sex because smartphones provide a frictionless, low-risk alternative to actual human interaction. Why risk the sting of rejection when you can just scroll through a screen instead? Finally, if you are managing cash, stop chasing the headline yield. Once you account for state taxes, treasury-backed assets can give high earners in places like California a 13.3% advantage over other options. That is the update for today. Thanks for listening.